spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The eternal light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our story today, entitled The Price of Liberty, written by Arnold Pearl, was adapted from the short story of the same name by Howard Fast, from the volume Patrick Henry and the Frigate's Keel. The role of Johnny Ordino is played by Ralph Bell, and Roger DeCoven is the narrator.
His name was Johnny Ordino, and he was a French Jew before he became an American Jew, and a sea captain, captain of a clipper. And his fight is something to sing about. And to this day in Baltimore and up and down the coast, they tell his story. But before another word is said, even if his story is not written down in all the histories, I will tell you it is simple truth. Some say he was small and with a pockmarked face and wild red hair. But others say this was unimportant, that instead he had a clipper so light, so fast, so daring that men fell in love with her as with a woman. But I will tell you that he had the spirit of liberty within him and the spirit of man, which is the same thing. And this was more important. But to begin at the beginning, it was in the city of Philadelphia in the year of 1812 when the British had built an iron wall of boats around the haven that was America, when the pockmarked man with flaming hair went into the little synagogue because he felt a need for prayer. At the close of the Minkah service for the afternoon prayers, and he stood there in the dim light, let the chant of the reader and the reverence of the room sweep over him like a blessing. Now the congregation could not help but notice the eyes of this man, a stranger, and the hair. And when the reader finished, they came up to him, this stranger, and they talked.
I am David Nonis, the Parnas here, the president.
Johnny Ordino is my name. A French name, but American and Jewish.
Welcome, and peace be with you.
I come because there is a time for doing and a time for praying.
In the house of the Lord, all men are welcome.
Do not mistake me for a fool. I speak the tongue. And my father's father was a rabbi, and on my mother's side, three rabbis in three generations.
And you, sir, you are not a rabbi?
I am a captain.
Ah.
But a captain now without a ship. I come to tell a story, to build a dream, if men will listen. I speak of a clipper with a shape so delicate and fast.
The evening service is beginning.
That men will ride her as the way... What?
You said it yourself. Yourself, you said it.
What did I say?
There is a time for doing and a time for praying. And now is not a time for doing.
They say he prayed that evening in the old synagogue in Philadelphia and stood with the congregation and spoke the hallowed words in the hallowed tongue.
Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee shall be upon thy heart.
And when the book was closed and it was after twilight, they gathered round, and he told them of his dream.
A name I have already. The Prince de Neuchâtel. A man who loved the taste of freedom, though a prince. And her lines, these I have already in my mind.
And where will you build her?
In Baltimore. Where else? What is there like a Baltimore clipper in the world? What like a gull that rides the wind?
If there was a blockade man of war, we fight the British.
And with what do we fight the war? A Have we iron for guns and shot in America? Have we cloth and canvas for the troops? No, these must come from distant shores.
Blockade runner, then, your clipper.
How many ships leave our ports? How many are there to show the King's own fleet the wake of a free American ship? An handful less.
Is this, then, why you came?
A Frenchman said it like your Jefferson. De l'audace, c'est encore de l'audace. Audacity, audacity, and more audacity. Only a fool does not go where men fight for freedom. So the masts and our sails...
Some say the great John Paul Jones himself made the drawings for the prince, and some that there was no ship at all, but only a dream in Johnny's mind as wild and audacious as freedom. But whatever the facts, he spoke so well they gave him the money, and he built the prince in Baltimore. Now you understand, of course, that freedom without the deed is only a word, and a ship without a crew is not a ship. And in those times, as I have said, ports were locked. The only hope for America lay in speedy privateers that could race the blockade and put water between themselves and the enemy vessels. But the crew of a blockade runner, that was another thing. For, as Johnny said,
they must be heroes, devils, pirates, and madmen rolled into one. They may come back rich, perhaps, or not at all. And more likely than not, they will end up underwater. But they must have the taste for freedom in their mouths.
And how were such to be found? Not easily, as you can guess. So Johnny wrote his bill to be posted and given away and read wherever men would gather to plead for recruits for the prince. And he stood by the clipper in her dock and waited.
You, Johnny Ordonneau.
I am Johnny Ordonneau.
You made this bill?
I made it, yes.
For men for your clipper?
Men for the prince. And there she sits. I made it, yes.
Read it, then.
You've got it yourself there. Read it.
I was a slave. Don't know reading. I heard some tell what it said.
Uh-huh. I'll read it, then.
The whole?
I'll read the whole. I am Johnny Ordonneau, a Jew from France, but an American. I sail for liberty, equality, independence. I offer shares or wages. I will take Irish, Jews, Negroes, Germans, Portuguese, Frenchmen, any who own the name American. Fill your hat with gold. Strike for liberty. I sail for a year and a day.
It says that in your bill?
I read it, man. I just read it to you.
I am 6'4" and 240 pounds and a Negro. I will take a wage.
Well, get on board, or then. There's work to do. Did you think I write one thing and mean another?
Some say they opened the jails to find his crew, and others that the old graves of the Revolution were opened to find the men he wanted. But whatever the facts, he put to sea with 100 men and 3 slim cannon. And on board there were 24 Negroes, of whom 11 were escaped slaves. And there were 20 Irish from the north and from the south, and 12 were Jews. And there were Portuguese and Spanish and German, all shades, all lands, all tongues. And on the captain's deck was Johnny Ordonneau, who loved the ease and beauty of his clipper and knew, as you will see, the price of liberty. These sailed the troubled seas of 1812. Now, 3 things Johnny had, or there would have been fighting enough aboard the clipper before they ever met the British. The one, his pipes, which he blew loud when he wanted them to listen. The second, his fists, like pistons. And the third, his voice, which could convince a congregation or rise above a storm. And on the second hour out, he took his place on top the deckhouse and put the pipes to his lips.
Said there'd be a share for each. Can you hear me there?
We hear you well enough.
Asher, I said, and so there will be, if you mark my words. You there, your name?
It's Isaac Gill, my name.
Where are you from, before America?
From Poland, sir.
A scholar, no?
A laborer. For if a man works, he is blessed.
A scholar. See, I said it. You'll be more than a scholar when I finish with you. The duties will be simple. Daily to keep up trim and clean, daily to run aloft and down, daily to drill, and daily to practice with the guns. Are you there, Gill?
Yes, sir, Captain.
Did you fire anything stronger than a commentary in your life?
No, sir, but if I need to...
You will, Isaac. That you will.
And how do we get our share?
You're more the Negro and the second mate, eh?
Aye. How do we get our share?
When we sight a sail, if she carry the British flag, we'll dip our colors to mock her and fire a salute across her bow.
To tell her what we think. That's fine. But how do we get the sail?
Then we'll pass her going once, leave off our cargo at a foreign shore, and pass her twice in coming into shore again. We'll take out furs and cotton, whatever Americans make, take them abroad, and bring back guns and powder and iron. Each time we run the blockade and bring her into port, what was the agreement?
One part for country, one part for the owners, and a third part for the crew.
That says it well. And one thing more. You are not sailors of a navy, nor am I a captain in a uniform. But we are in the service of our new country. And this is war. So, when I sound this pipe...
We'll come on top to listen.
Aha! The scholar learned.
Look a-hoe, Johnny! Look a-hoe!
Aye, look out! What?
Look a-hoe! 5 points to starboard! She's a 20-gun warship, and she flies the British flag!
And as he said, they circled the enemy and dipped their colors and sped out to sea in the service of their land. They sailed for shares. They sailed for liberty. They raced, and there was nothing British on the water could catch the Baltimore Clipper, nothing. Now they say, who tell this story, that in that year Johnny sailed so wide and far, and the scholar learned to handle the gun so well, and the crew to understand their freedom and their shares, that they made 18 trips to the Indies, to Africa, to the continent, and back each time. They brought in Prussian guns, machines from France, and foodstuffs, too, to nourish the American fighters. And then, when the year was up, on a quiet day in the Baltic Sea...
Captain Johnny, sir?
What is it, Isaac? What is it, scholar? I'm joking, only.
I've learned a little in this year, but I know our bottom's fouling.
I know, I know. 18 blockades run, and she lists a little.
And Morn can tell you more.
She should be in dry dock, and I and others on farm. A year is a long time to a clipper and a man.
And then you said it yourself. There is a time for doing, and a time for praying.
Ah, the holidays are coming soon, eh?
They that go down to the sea in ships, do business in great waters. These saw the works of the Lord, and his wonders of the deep.
So, we'll put to a port in this German coast, discharge our cargo, take a last one on, and then for home.
They smiled in port, the crew, as they loaded cargo. For this was the last they'd see foreign shores. They saw the German roofs and thought of an American village, each the one he came from. And then, as they were ready to cast off, Johnny saw the little group gather before his boat. Four there were, carrying a bundle of rags between them and no more. And they called out to the captain and the gunner.
We hear you go to America.
Eh? And what is that to you?
We seek a haven. We seek refuge. We seek a life.
What you saw in France, Captain Johnny, and I in Poland. Now, here in Germany.
But Isaac will run a blockade. These are no sailors.
It is a good deed to fulfill the words of a dying man.
You will sleep on a deck and eat what is not needed?
We seek only refuge, only life.
So their cargo was a human cargo, too. And with them and what was in his hold, Johnny took the wind to the North American coast. And the way was clear and the wind was strong. When a dozen miles off Nantucket, the lookout cried,
"Look ahoy! Look ahoy, Johnny! She's a 44 gun devil, and she flies a Union Jack!"
And all eyes watched her, the lumbering hull and her 44 cannon and the enemy flag that flew from her mast. Then Morn, the mate, said,
"That big one, Johnny, she blockade off Nantucket.
And if we draw out to sea, we open up the port a day or more, eh? Maybe we have some fun, eh?"
So in the breeze, the Clipper played a dangerous game with the giant frigate. Johnny tacked round her, ran before her, cut across her bow. And the frigate rolled and churned, and there was anger aboard her deck. So Johnny tacked again and dipped his colors in derision. And the frigate's captain's anger rose, and he ordered full pursuit. And Johnny neatly drew her out to sea. And when the frigate's captain spoke through his gun, Johnny laughed aloud. For though any of her 44 could cut his boat in two, not one of the 44 could touch him. That he knew. And he watched the captain through his glass. And at the end of the first day's chase, they tell the story that the captain's face was red as any beet and ready to burst. And then at noon of the second day, with the vessel 2 miles apart. The winds stopped suddenly and both lay motionless on the sea. And Johnny chatted the situation with his gunner.
There she sits. There, Isaac. She's fat, but she is fair.
With a vessel under you like that, what could you do?
Who knows? Maybe win a battle like the ship the Constitution. Maybe win a war. A ship like that.
Yet, Baltimore Clipper is something, too, huh?
And sailing under the Stars and Stripes, that, too, eh, Isaac?
When there are Jews in ghettos with neither hope nor future like those on board the refugees, to be under God's sky, breathing God's own air.
And so they talked philosophy until Morn, the giant who was second mate, came running up.
"Look, Johnny, look. They move in there. What are they do?"
Oh. They are launching the ship's boats. The captain's barge. And the storming barges. And the lifeboat.
Then it's a fight.
A fight it is. I was wrong, Isaac. I was wrong. This is no time for praying yet, but it is a time for doing. It's more than a blockade we run. It's a haven that we seek for them below, the refugees, and for us.
It had to happen, and a battle was in motion. So Johnny cleared the decks for action, and he issued muskets, pikes, and cutlasses, and he told the cook to boil up all the pitch on board, and he issued rounds. When the refugees asked to take their part and handle guns with the crew, because, as has been said, a haven does not come to them who wait, Johnny gave them rounds. And with the rest, together there, they waited. The frigate lowered files of British redcoat marine into the boats. Then brass two-pounders and seamen and pikemen and gunners and rammers. And there never seemed an end to them. 10 times the number of men, perhaps, on Johnny's fragile craft. And slowly, with measured oars, the armada came on toward Johnny's boat. And you must remember that the captain's barge alone was equal in size almost to Johnny's clipper. Though Johnny leapt on top the deckhouse barefooted, as most of his crew were, the better to have their footing, red sashed with bell pantaloons, 2 pistols at his waist and a pike in his hand. Then he called out,
"This is going to be one fight! Give the flag up and your pistols in your hands! And fire the cannon when I whistle!"
Now they say there never was a battle like this one. But when the British boats were 300 yards away, Johnny blew his pipe and Isaac's little guns belched smoke and cut a swath through the Marines and the captain's barge. That when the prows of the British boats reached Johnny's side,
Such a fire of muskets and a crash of cannon and a splash of pitch greeted them that they were stuck. And taking advantage of that moment, Johnny screamed,
"Listen, brothers! For liberty! For refuge! Contender!"
And the 36 fought and clubbed and used their knives or fists or what they could, and in the end repelled the British, who pulled back out to sea like growling dogs. And Johnny and his men lay on the deck trembling with the effort and the terror of the fight. And some lay stiff in death. And 2 miles off, the frigate rose and fell on the windless sea. And Johnny cautioned,
"Rest, for they'll be back. They will be back."
He knew they would be back, for his was a Baltimore clipper of 30 men and a flag for freedom, and theirs was a British Lion with 300 men or more. There are not words to tell of the second and third and fourth attacks, and how Isaac Gill fell, and Portuguese Joe and the Negro, Kenton Bull, who was the cook, and an escaped slave who could make a fiddle sound like a woman singing. There are not words for this, or how the refugees were killed, each one. But in the terrible end, the clipper was not lost. Yet 2 men, only 2, Johnny Audreneau and Mons, the giant Negro, were alive upon her deck. And Mons gasped,
"Let the wind blow, Johnny. Let God's wind blow and take us away."
And finally, the breeze did blow like a caress upon their cheeks and on the dead who lay upon the deck. And they say that in Nantucket, to this very day, they tell the story of a ghost ship that came into harbor with only 2 alive, a captain with red hair and a mate, a Negro. And when someone called out to them, asking,
"How did you come by the blockading frigate?"
Johnny answered,
"We fought that frigate. We fought her, and we defeat her."
And though it was impossible, no one doubted the word of the pockmarked captain with the flaming hair. And so the story is, some say, he came back to the place from whence he started, to the synagogue. And in the dim light, he sat and prayed while they returned the scroll to the Holy Ark. And with the sight still in his eyes and the sounds in his ears of the terrible fight, he listened to the hallowed words.
"Forsake ye not my Torah. It is a tree of life to them that grasp it. Its ways are ways of pleasantness, and all its paths for peace."
And thinking of all the cargo he had run, of the dead who had fallen and the refuge that men seek in America, when the scroll of the law was returned to the ark and was proper for those who wished to come before the congregation and speak, he rose and spoke. Remembering the eyes of Isaac Gill and the others who had fallen, he said,
They go down to the sea in ships. They cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He made the storm a calm and led them unto their desired haven. Let them give thanks unto the Lord for his mercy and for his wondrous works to the children of men.
And then he asked a question. What, he said, what is the price of freedom? And each man in the congregation considered how a price might be set on freedom. And one thought,
those who fought and died in our revolution.
And another thought,
the price of a ship, of a home burnt, of a child lost.
And a third,
the hope of men for a haven in a hostile world.
But none answered the question even for himself. For how was an accounting to be given for such things as liberty? Then Johnny softly said,
From my voyage, there are profits. But I would not mention money in the house of God except to say that this is not the price. The price is in the blood of brave men, and it was never bought in any other way. And if it please the congregation, this should be written in the record of the synagogue. And when this is done, I will post my bills again and find a new crew for my boat.
Our Eternal Light story today, entitled The Price of Liberty, written by Arnold Pearl, was adapted from a short story of the same name by Howard Fast from the volume Patrick Henry and the Frigate Keel. The role of Johnny Ortono was played by Ralph Bell, and Roger DeCoven was the narrator. The music is composed by Morris Mamorsi and conducted by Milton Catus. The liturgical music was sung by cantor Robert H. Siegel. The entire production is under the direction of Frank Papp. For a free copy of today's script, write to the Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This program is a weekly presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations in cooperation with the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.